WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
There's been plenty of bad news about foods that may cause cancer, but there's also some potential good news. Some foods may help prevent cancer. Susan Oliveira is an epidemiologist at the Strang Cancer Prevention Center, which is affiliated with Cornell University, where she teaches. She focuses on the link between nutrition and cancer. Oliveira is the co-author of the Strang Cookbook for Cancer Prevention. She says that cancer researchers are studying phytochemicals, substances found in fruits and vegetables, which may have the ability to block or suppress carcinogens.
The ways in which we think that they act is to detoxify particular carcinogens that might be in our body and to help block any carcinogenic changes. Also as what we call tumor suppressors, to actually suppress carcinogenic changes. So maybe there's some genetic alterations going on, and these phytochemicals actually will help to suppress these. And then there's other ancillary roles that we think these phytochemicals will play, such as increasing immune function, acting as antioxidants, and reducing what we call cell proliferation or cell growth.
So what foods can we find these phytochemicals in?
Well, it really goes back to what we've heard probably all our lives. The good old fruits and vegetables are where we find the predominant amount of these phytochemicals. But we're also finding phytochemicals in things such as soy, which is from a soybean. Some of us know it as tofu. And there's many soy products that are available right now, such as soy milk, soy cheese. In soy, for instance, the particular phytochemical is called isoflavones. And these, again, act, as I had mentioned, to suppress carcinogenic changes. And all this stuff is very, very new, but we believe and feel comfortable that this is really what's going on, because we've known for a long time that fruits and vegetables and some of these other foods actually reduce cancer. So it makes sense that when we get down on more of a molecular or biological level, we can actually see some of these substances. So what we're purporting here is not anything that is not backed up by scientific and medical consensus.
I think that there are attempts now to put phytochemicals into pill form so that you could just take phytochemical supplements. What do you know about that, and how effective is ingesting these substances through pill form?
Well, that's an excellent point, and I think a really good question that needs to be addressed, because the American public really generally looks for the quick fix. They look for the pill that they can take. They look for the vitamin that they can take. You know, they don't want to work at changing their diet or their nutrition on a daily basis. And what we know about is very little about these new phytochemicals that are coming out in pill form that you have seen in the health food stores. And it's a very dangerous area to be moving into, taking phytochemical pills per se, because they're synthetic, and we really don't know in the quantities that they're made in or the quantities that people are taking them in interaction with other things, how they're going to react. So you're really better off to go back to basics and get these phytochemicals from your fruits and vegetables and to stay away from the pill forms, because we just don't know enough about them.
Now, some research is showing that there are certain fish oils that could be very beneficial in preventing cancer?
Yes. The omega-3s is what they are called, and they are actually also classified as one of the phytochemicals. They sort of classify them under that grouping. And we have known that omega-3s found in the fatty fishes, such as swordfish and tuna and salmon, can reduce some forms of cancer. And that's the interesting thing here. Not all of these foods or not all of these substances act on all cancers. They work on some cancers. So that you have to be careful in what you're eating and why you're eating it. The best approach is to really eat moderately and eat lots of different things. With respect to the omega-3s, we do know that when people have a higher intake of these, they have reduced risk for cancers.
Now, you don't recommend trying to take omega-3 oils in pill form. Why not?
Right. definitely that should only be undertaken under a physician's consultation. They do have and can have serious side effects such as hemorrhaging and stroke, and can increase cholesterol levels. So that really needs to be done under a physician's care, and should not be there should be no form of self-medicating with the fish oil capsules.
Let's look at antioxidants. You hear a lot of talk about them now. I don't really understand what they are.
Well, antioxidant is a term that is a sort of a catch-all term used to describe many types of foods, vitamins, even phytochemicals are sometimes described as antioxidants. So that's more of an adjective, more of a descriptor. And it just basically means that this food or this vitamin has the property of being able to stop the oxidation process and to stop the potential DNA repair, DNA damage that can occur because of this process that we all go under called oxidation. It's a little bit complicated, but during our metabolism, we actually have oxidation that goes on. And these free radicals, these little unstable molecules, float around in our body. And what our body does generally is to suppress these little free radicals. They sort of act as scavengers and sort of suppress them. If they're not suppressed, they can actually go on to do damage to the cells. And so any type of vitamin or food that actually works against this, we describe as an antioxidant. So for instance, some of the vitamins, vitamin A, vitamin C, vitamin E, they've been shown to have these antioxidant properties. Vitamin C is another one. Also, many of these phytochemicals that we talked about also have these properties of being antioxidants. And it's good to have these in your diet because they do counterbalance some of the effects of this oxidation or these free radicals.
Now, you've recommended certain things not be taken in pill form, such as omega-3 oils, phytochemicals. We don't know enough about that yet, you say, to take it in pill form. But what about antioxidants? Because a lot of vitamin supplements now are coming with antioxidants in them.
Yes. Generally, the big picture is that try to get all your what you need from food. That's really what we recommend. But in some instances, you feel like you need a little bit more insurance. And we went through and actually basically said which vitamins we felt comfortable with. Vitamin C, we felt if a person wanted to supplement with that, as long as they kept it under 400 milligrams, that would be fine. Generally, if you just take a multivitamin, that's going to do the trick, and try not to supplement with individual vitamins, because that's when you start with what we call mega dosing. And you just don't know how all these extra doses of vitamins are going to interact with your body. You can actually be doing yourself some harm.
What kind of harm can you do with vitamins?
Well, you can, if they're a vitamin that is actually stored in your body, some of the vitamins are what we call fat soluble, so they actually can be stored in your fat. You can actually build up toxic levels. And depending on the vitamin and depending on the interaction with other vitamins, there can be many different side effects. So you have to be very careful of what you're supplementing with. And that actually also goes into some of the new herbal, they're not called vitamins, but the herbal types of remedies that are out there. You have to be very careful with that. And our book really didn't address the whole idea of herbals because that's an area that is just so preliminary at this point. And it just, there's no science to really back that up, that we did not move into that area.
Now, some supplements say that they have selenium in it, and selenium is one of the antioxidants. It's, I think, for many of us, a new word in the nutritional vocabulary. Could you tell us a little bit about what selenium is, whether it enters the picture in cancer prevention, and what you think of selenium supplements?
Yeah, selenium has been for a long time really thought of as this might be the key, this might be the magic bullet. It looked as though it was going to have cancer-fighting properties. So far to date, the research has given some evidence and some suggestion that for certain cancers, but the disadvantage of selenium is that it can be highly toxic. And so you have to be very careful. And our recommendation is that it can be taken, but in a very small amount, and we give the amount for that. I think the research is still ongoing with selenium. I would not recommend supplementing with selenium supplements per se. You'll get some in a multivitamin. And just to clarify, when I say a supplement, I mean an individual pill that you would buy in a bottle that says selenium versus your multivitamin that has a little bit of everything in it.
My guest is Susan Oliveira, epidemiologist at the Strang Cancer Prevention Center, which is affiliated with Cornell University, where she teaches. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Dr. Susan Oliveira. She's co-author of the Strang Cookbook for Cancer Prevention. She's director of epidemiology at the Strang Cancer Prevention Center, which is affiliated with Cornell University. In discussing foods that might be bad for you, you really divide them into two categories. One is carcinogens and the other is cancer promoters. What's the difference between those two categories?
What we think happens with the cancer cycle is that we think there's two phases to it. There's a promotion, an initiation, where a cell sort of gets primed for cancer. Doesn't mean you have cancer. And this actually can be due to certain environmental factors. Smoking is what we would call an initiator. Air pollution is what we call an initiator. To date, there aren't any foods that we think actually initiate cancer. Okay, so you're setting the stage in your body. The next phase is called promotion. And this is a very simplistic model, but we think this is how it works. And this promotion phase is when a lot of the lifestyle things that we do actually can increase our risk and sort of take those initiated cells and sort of turn them into cancer. And this is where fatty foods will come into play. If you don't have foods that are high in cancer-fighting substances like the fruits and vegetables, they may come into play. And again, this is a hypothesis, so this is what we think happens. We're not 100% sure, but it's the best guess that we have right now. So therefore, you can see that it's a long process, generally 10 to 30 years before a cancer develops, and that if you do make changes in your lifestyle, you really can make changes in your cancer risk and reduce your risk of cancer.
In your book, you write that diet contributes to 20 to 40% of all cancer. That's a lot. In what way does diet contribute to it?
Well, the way that those numbers have been estimated is researchers got together and they looked at all the different exposures or environmental things that happen to us, whether that be smoking, air pollution, what we eat, what we drink, how active we are. And they tried to come up using advanced statistical techniques of sort of like a model that sort of broke it up. If you think of a pie chart and sort of what portion of the pie can be attributed to diet. And they basically came up with some numbers that, are guesstimates of where we think certain environmental factors play out. And this is important because it can sort of tell us what's important. So, for instance, you know, food additives, people think that those are a huge cause of cancer. But when you look at this pie, they actually account for probably less than 1% of all cancers. Then you go and you look at diet, and that accounts for a huge slice of the pie, probably around 30, you know, anywhere from 20 to 40%. And this is just a ballpark figure to give people an idea of what changes would really make an impact. And also for people who are in public health, if we really want to focus on changing people's behavior, where's the best bang for our buck here?
You seem pretty confident that certain foods can have a positive impact on preventing cancer. Do you think that most oncologists would agree? Do you think most oncologists give the kind of information you would like to see them give about food?
Yeah, the reason that I'm so confident about this is that when in writing this book, there's the section that I was predominantly responsible for was the science and the medical aspects of it. And basically, I did all of the research. I went out and I pulled every article. All of the articles are peer-reviewed. They're all from reputable scientific journals. So I feel very comfortable with interpreting this data and with making these recommendations. There's other institutions in the country that have seen this and also agree this is, you know, this is very much mainline. This is where we need to be with it. I think the problem arises when you get into more the clinical end of it, where people are actually treating individual patients. A lot many of the physicians, many of the oncologists, they do not have the same background and training in nutrition. So therefore, they have more of a broad brush stroke. They may not be able to get to all this information and may not have it. And I think sometimes just by virtue of trying to treat, say, the cancer patient, you know, you've got a cancer, you've got to work on that first before you work on somebody's diet. So things take priority. What I think is really important is down with the primary care physicians and the internists and the family practitioners, I think it's really important to get this information to them.
Dr. Oliveira, have you changed your diet in the past few years as more research is conducted on the relationship of food and cancer?
Well, it's interesting. This has always sort of been a hobby of mine ever since I've been in my early 20s. And I actually changed a career that I had to go into this when I was in my mid-20s. So I've actually been on the bandwagon for a while. What I am thinking about now on a personal level is I'm expecting my first child. And it's very important to me to start instilling some of these behaviors and some of these nutritional guidelines in my child with the idea that kids don't want to eat this stuff. So that's my big challenge that will be coming forward for me. And that's where I really want to be able to take this, because we do know from research that shows that children adopt eating habits early in life, and then they track, which means if you eat poorly as a child, you're more likely to eat poorly as an adult. So your really best chance to make an impact is at a young age. On the other hand, it's never too late for any of us to change our diet. And most of the research that has been done in adults, so that we know the reduced risk from eating this healthy diet can make an effect late in life as well as early in life.
Well, good luck in getting your child to eat fruits and vegetables.
Thank you.
Susan Oliveira is the co-author of the Strang Cookbook for Cancer Prevention. The Strang Cancer Prevention Center is affiliated with Cornell University, where she teaches.